mean, come on. You'll get on me when I do stuff wrong. Get on them. Say, why are you holding up the Clean Air Act? Why can't you move ethics legislation? Why don't you go forward on the program or on the educational initiative? And if they say it's not enough, take a step. Get your foot in the water. Do something. The American people know why this deficit isn't down. It's not down because they see 4-1 that the Congress is to blame. Join me in this noble crusade.
What are you going to do differently?
Exhort. What else can I do? Veto and exhort. Send stuff down I can't accept, it goes back. A president has to show that that's his responsibility. But he's got to encourage the American people to get on their representatives to do what they want done. Our drug program is a good example. It came out with strong support from the American people. And yet the legislative pieces of that are languishing up there. Yeah.
Oh, on question. In April, we were in the Rose Garden watching you and the congressional leaders announce the bipartisan budget package. And at the time, we were told equally as important as what was in the package was the spirit of cooperation
exactly. In
forging it. And my question is, what's happened? Where did you go wrong in that we're having a...
That's the answer to Fred's question. Where did someone else go wrong? We've been trying to cooperate in a bipartisan fashion. Look, if I make a big mistake, I'll admit it, but I don't think so when it comes to the approach to the budget. We got some honest differences on some things, and maybe with George Mitchell there's an honest difference on capital gains, for example. In our budget proposal, it was in there with a certain revenue figure next to it. I don't think I went wrong. That's my responsibility. Here's what I believe. And I think that there's been a little bit of a partisanship that occurred up there when you hear them all come out with a rather unflattering word on the same day to describe my leadership. You begin to wonder, including the national chairman of the Democratic Party, you begin to wonder what goes awry. But let's leave aside the politics. I'll be ready come the fall of 1990, and let's move the legislative process forward.
This was supposed to be groundwork for cooperation on next year's budget, which was going to be the real tough one. Have we lost all hope of that now?
Well, I think a lot on 91 depends on what happens, in the last few days here. What kinds of decisions are made?
Staying on the budget for a minute, the Pentagon feels it can't live with the consequences of a sequester, apparently, and you issued a statement last week saying that you're prepared to manage the government under those circumstances. As a person who campaigned, as a candidate who would defend the Pentagon and keep defenses strong, how do you explain this to the people who supported you on the basis of...
I tell them, please get in touch with the Congress and do what we suggested back there when we had those meetings. Please help us keep the defenses of this country strong. But if that is frustrated by the inability to get an acceptable reconciliation bill, I have no choice. And I think the Pentagon leaders understand that. Dick Cheney has done a superb job. He has fought with diminishing resources for a sound Pentagon budget. And it troubles me to have Congress insensitive and also to add in. I mean, it's tough. Look, I know it's tough to cut systems, but you go to cut them, and Cheney makes some very tough decisions backed by the president, and then the Congress trades around and adds them back in. And so it's a question of, staying with what we find is a priority for this defense program and trying to stay with it. But I've got to live with the system also.
Yeah. Are you willing to meet with Prime Minister Shamir when he comes to Washington?
Whether he's coming or not, I'm not sure. Certainly willing to consider it. And he is giving, I think, the real effort now to work out support for the Baker points, the Baker proposals. And I'd like to feel that a meeting would be held and that it would be constructive, that we'd have something positive to talk about. Yeah.
Mr. President, last week you said in response to the Nicaraguan decision to end the ceasefire that you would keep your options open. And yet the best headcounters, in fact, most of the worst headcounters on the Hill, all say you don't have the option of new military aid to the Contras. So isn't that, in effect, a meaningless statement?
Well, I'll tell you, no, because I think one option now is to to encourage in every way we can these talks that will result in a ceasefire. I worry about what Ortega has done. The only good thing about it, everybody sees that he is swimming against the tide, and I think that it's much clearer to some who in our hemisphere who are inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt. But I'm not going to give up on hoping that they can get back to the...
You think, sir, that you still have the option of renewing military aid to the conflict, do you?
It would be extremely difficult to get the money, if that's what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, Maureen?
Mr. President, Nancy Reagan says that you went to see her and said you agreed that Don Regan should leave as chief of staff, but that when she asked you to go to President Reagan, you said that was not your role. Number one, is that the way you remember it? And number two, now that Quayle is vice president, if he thought there was someone who was not serving you well, do you agree that it's not his role to come and tell you that?
No, I think it's his role to tell me anything that's on his mind, which is exactly the relationship I had with President Reagan, and that's the way I worked as vice president.
Sir, could you just answer?
No, I can't help you on that. I don't want to get into that one. What was the next question? Why? Never mind.
Yeah. Given that today is election day, I wonder if you're satisfied with the level of political discourse you see, if you think that this negativism that's being raised in one campaign after another is excessive, and if you feel you can do anything about it yourself, given that your last campaign was quite negative or critical, if you prefer that word.
I think everybody would prefer the positives. What some consider negative, others consider factual. So you always have a judgmental problem there. But I'm not sure there is much that a president can do about it in terms of, I don't want to inhibit a candidate from taking his case to the people or her case to the people in any way he or she sees fit. On the other hand, I think the American people have a way of sorting out what's fair and what's not fair, what's ugly and what isn't ugly. And I have great confidence in that they're right this election day a year ago. I think they sorted through some of these allegations that this was the ugliest, dirtiest campaign. And I think they voted on more positive basis than that.
Mr. President, coming off of Ken's question, though, how do you respond to those who suggest that the negative campaigning that started earlier in this campaign than usual is a legacy of 88 when it was shown to be successful?
Well, I don't say anything started in 1988 that hadn't been taken place in 86 or 84 or 82 or 80 or, you know, and if you look into history, you're going to have certain things that are considered negative. I don't have to stand here and defend the campaign of 1988. I'd be perfectly prepared to do it, but I was elected because I put confidence in the American people, their ability to sort through what is fair and what is unfair, what is ugly and what is unugly, and be as positive as possible. But while people were running around, you know, in campaigns talking about ads this year, the candidates have been out there taking their case on various issues out there. So I think there's a little bit of a beltway syndrome here in terms of this intense focus on negativism. And yet, if their trend is that way, maybe I can have a role in seeing that it gets a little more positive.
How would you do that?
Well, say I think it ought to be a little more positive. I mean, what else can you do? I'm certainly not going to legislate it, and certainly not going to try to dictate to a candidate how he or she, reacts in a certain situation. But there'll be a lot of interpretation on one candidate or another, and we'll all go back to whether there needs some other way to approach this. But when you get right down to it, I do not want to see legislation try to get into this question. It gets into a censorship mode that I just would feel very uncomfortable with. And then I got to go.
Mr. President, President Nixon's public comments about his meetings with Chinese leaders seem to imply that the Chinese believe that now it's time for the U.S. to act if we want better relations with the Chinese. Was there anything that former president told you in private that encourages you, thinking that relations with the Chinese will improve and anything we can do?
The Chinese have a slogan: he who ties the knot should untie it. the Chinese still feel that we tied the knot and thus should untie it. I don't feel that way. President Nixon's visit to China was very helpful because he was an unofficial visitor. He is respected in China as a Lao Peng Yo, old friend. He is a man who opened a relationship with China when things were extraordinarily difficult, not just a lack of communication, but go back to history and take a look at the, you were in the last vestiges of the Cultural Revolution, where, you know, many, many, many people, hundreds of thousands are reportedly lost their lives. And so he went there at a difficult time. He saw the fundamental importance of this relationship, as I do. He could speak quite frankly to the Chinese leaders, and they in turn spoke very frankly to him. And I think he made the point that we didn't tie the knot. Now, I think that helps. Because of the respect that the leaders in China have for President Nixon, I think that visit was very constructive. He carried no messages from me. He was not on a semi-official mode or anything, a mission or anything of that nature. But I think I have a better feeling of where Chinese leaders stand at this point because of having been debriefed by President Nixon. I wish there were some positive steps that I could suggest to them that they take. There are some things that I will keep private that I have quietly recommended. And we'll see where it goes. But this relationship is important to us. As those of you who know my views on this question, I have never favored the concept of a card, playing a Soviet card, playing a Chinese card. The relationship has to stand on its merits. Having said that, there is enormous geopolitical reasons for us to have relations with the People's Republic of China. And yet, there is this affront, the Tiananmen Square situation. And so we've got to try now, and I would say, I hope with understanding from this group, who has your job to do, but I got mine, in a quiet way, to find steps that can be taken, perhaps on both sides, to see this relation move back towards more normalization. And the Nixon visit contributed to that very, very much, in my view. At least it helped me in my thinking. I know those of us who visited with him found it extraordinarily helpful.
Now complete, do you think? Is Nixon's rehabilitation now complete?
Well, thank you for your understanding and support on this election day. I want to take one question on Lebanon. I am deeply offended by the Aoun supporters who tried to humiliate the patriarch yesterday. This does not contribute to peace in any way. I have expressed my support, obviously, for the tripartite process. We have been on the phone in the past to the Pope, to François Mitterrand, to the Secretary General, to President Mubarak, to King Fahd, to others, to encourage not just the tripartite approach, but others, particularly in thinking of the Secretary General. We have set out a statement of support to the newly elected President Moad, and the steps that Aoun's people took yesterday should be condemned, and it is wrong. And this idea of some discussion of a further grief on that marvelous country by partition is totally unacceptable to countries around the world. And so I'm glad this subject came up, and I will continue to try to find ways to show U.S. support for peace initiatives. And we were discussing that this morning. I really think that special credit ought to go to the king of Saudi Arabia for convening those TAIF meetings, and for the legislator to the legislators that are that attended, the courage that they showed in going there, and the quest for freedom, and I mean the quest for peace in that country was so you could just feel it in what those legislators are hoping to accomplish. And then along comes these followers that I would term totally out of order and going in there and trying to humiliate the Maronite patriarch, and it is just totally counterproductive. And I hope that we can find a way to build on the new election, build on in Syrian willingness to get out, move those troops out, withdraw all foreign forces from Lebanon, and I'm talking about all foreign forces, reconciliation under President Mouad, and the reform, implement the reforms that have been spoken to, addressed in Taif, and therein lies a formulation for peace. But you're talking to one who feels the question of Lebanon all the time. I've been there. I've seen it as a peaceful crossroads in an always troubled corner of the world. And I just hope that before I leave this job that I can in some way contribute to the restoration of peace in the Lebanon. Thank you all very much.